welcome to River Writers, a production of the Writers Guild of Astoria, a 501c3 nonprofit supporting writers and the literary arts on the North Coast in the Lower Columbia region. Aired the second Monday of each month at 9 a.m., River Writers provides a chance to peek behind the curtain at the craft of writing. What motivates writers to do the work they do? And what have they learned through their creative process? This month, I met up with Jason Arias at the Clatsop Community College. We sat in the library, watched the big ships go by, and spoke about writing.
All right. This month, I'm speaking to Jason Arias. Jason is a writer who moved to the Oregon coast in 2020. You have two books out. The first book, The Momentary Illumination of Objects in Motion, and that was released in 2018 by Black Bomb Books.
That's right.
Is it Black Bomb Books or Black Bomb Press?
Black Bomb Books. I think they like the B's, triple B's.
Yeah, alliteration is something. So that book is, that was your debut book, right? It was a book of short story collection. And that, focused on life and death and race and identity and change and resistance and resistance to change and resistance to change.
All of it. Yeah, it sounds right.
I want to read some praise from the book because, Lydia was on this show.
Oh, was she? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's great, man.
So she's one of the first people I asked it because she lives on the Oregon coast, too. Just a little bit further down.
It's crazy.
So what she said about your book, Lydia Yuknovich, the author of Chronology of Water and Book of Joan, she said, Jason Arias will break your heart, blow your mind, make you laugh, and bring you to the edge of everything that matters. That's got to be awesome coming from her.
Dude, that is amazing. She was very kind. Her words were very kind.
Yeah. And, let's talk about the Lydia Yuknovich connection. We were both in the Misfits Manifesto, right?
Yep.
Yeah. What chapter did you do?
Towards the end. It might have been the last one.
I had the first one. Yeah. So that's funny.
Interesting. Bookends.
Yeah. And you went, did you go in and do the audio? Audiobook?
Yeah. That was pretty fun.
That was awesome. I wanted to read this one too because Matthew Robinson, author of Horse Latitude, said, inspired, challenging, heartbreaking, and uplifting. The stories of momentary illumination of objects in motion are an after midnight bar story, a foxhole prayer, a graveyard shift confession. Jason Arias confronts masculinity and identity and memory and authority as urgently needed as anything in fiction today.
Wow. That just solidifies how much better of a writer Matt is than I am.
He's got some big old words in there, dude.
He's just. That was kind of. He's a great author too, as you know. He's a buddy of yours too.
Yeah. Funny. So now you have a new book out.
Yeah.
And you're gonna have to give me. I know how I would pronounce the title, but I want to know.
Oh, go for it. How would you? I'm always interested.
Nostradamus.
That's it.
2032.
That's it. Yeah,
so what is the significance of 2032? It's just, you're like, all right, it's 6 years from...
Yeah, it's just a thing. I wanted it somewhere in the future, but like the attainable future, right? Like you had... Yeah. I think you're familiar with Deltron's 3030.
Yeah.
Do you know that? Like that concept album? It's a concept
album.
No,
I thought that was his rapping name.
Yeah, his name is Del the Funky Homo Sapien.
Okay.
And then Deltron was like a super group formed with him and a couple of DJs or whatever. So like Deltron 3030 is way off in the future. Kind of too far off in the future. So I wanted something closer. But also, realistically, that's when I can retire. So.
Oh, that's your retirement year? Yeah. Oh, that's great. What are you doing down there?
I work still in Beaverton.
Oh, you still work in Beaverton? You travel?
Yep.
Oh, because you're a firefighter. You stay down there for like 3 days at a time?
Sometimes. I was doing 2 days on, 4 days off. But now I'm back to 1 day on, 2 days off. So it's a little more travel.
Yeah. That's a long ways.
It's a little ways. Yeah. I'm really familiar with 26.
Yeah.
That bump that keeps growing. They shave it off and it keeps growing. You know what I'm, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. There's a couple. Even says bump. And it, like sometimes in the winter I go over it and I'm catching some air.
Dude.
Good thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think people have been blowing tires over that thing. So be careful.
It's just horrible.
Be careful out there.
I don't know which way is worse, that or 30.
I know, right?
Some people get smashed into. They got to pass. They're in a hurry, you know.
Yeah, they got to pass.
So let's go back to your book, Nostradamus 2032. What is this about?
Dude, well, I mean, it kind of is a concept album. I love concept albums.
Yeah,
and
me
right? And I love music. And so I wanted to write a concept album. So it's kind of, right? So it looks at, like, our relationship with technology and each other and ourselves. And I needed something to do with all my angst. Right? I feel like change is like...
There's plenty of angst going around last couple of years for sure.
Yeah. So that's kind of what it is. That's how I like to describe it. It get me somewhere. All right.
So I read this great essay that you did in the Corvallis Advocate.
Cool.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
About moving to the coast.
Yeah,
the Majestic and Unimpressed. It really is an amazing place that we live in, right?
Absolutely.
And it's hard not to reflect it in our writing. So how does nature factor into your art?
Everywhere since I moved here. And
yes.
Maybe the same.
Is it more since you moved here?
Absolutely, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because I've been in Portland for years, 30 years or something.
Yeah.
And we moved out here and it's just nice. There's less people and more animals. So, and you forget that when there's more people and less animals, more concrete and people making fun of the pigeons, you know, calling the flying rats and stuff. But when you get out here, you realize like, oh man, there's all this stuff around you and it's like in your face, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah, man. So I live here in town on Lexington up on the hill there. And every morning there's deer just running through, you know, I was gone and went to Denver for a while. I was traveling around. And I came back this last week, and the first morning I'm back, I get the whole herd of deer. I'm like, I'm back, you know.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like a Disney princess. I go out, and the birds are singing to me.
Absolutely. That's what my wife says.
Yeah.
She's feeding squirrels and birds. And, the elk used to come through our yard, too, which is cool.
Well, you had elk. We had city deer.
Elks
are huge.
They're huge. They're amazing. They're amazing creatures, man.
I think I said elks with a...
I say elks with an S, too, sometimes. I know,
but I grew up rural, and, you know, I'm going to have to give that card back if I keep messing up. But, all right. So how has living on the North Coast shaped your poetic voice and style?
Dude, I mean, that book is the first poetry book I've written as an adult, right? I wrote a lot of bad poetry as a teen.
Yeah.
So luckily none of that made it in. Like, that'd be a fun one to do, too. But I just think, I mean, it's just slowed down, right? And I started wondering what could I do more with less, if that makes sense. Because out here there kind of is less. There's less of us and there's more of nature.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of, that's a relevance to me. And so I just like, hey, man, instead of saying all these words, maybe I say fewer.
Oh,
and poetry
so it's
leans
like
into
economy
that,
of language type of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I started messing with like erasure poetry with,
which
you're probably familiar with, right?
So that's like you're taking a book and then you line out everything except for certain words and you create a poem off of that, what you didn't take out.
Exactly. Yeah. So you omit most of the words and there's tons of ways to do it. You can either draw over the rest of the words or just black them out or put like a picture and cut out the holes.
Do you do that in this new book, Nostradamus?
I wish. I wanted somebody to do that with my old book. That would be a fun thing to do. Because I've done it with people's books. And so fair is fair, right?
I know, but they're crossing out all the words this year.
Yeah, that's great, man. Like, you got to destroy art to make art. That's good.
All right, so you're living out here. So around what town do you live in?
Gearhart.
Yeah. And so do you have any specific natural features or special hikes or secret places that you like to just go hang out?
You can't say those things.
Don't give up the secret.
But absolutely there are. Yeah, there's a lot of great hikes, man, around here, you know.
That
part of the beach you can drive on as well.
Oh, I love that, too. Yeah,
so you drive down to Peter's Iresdale, the shipwreck and stuff, which is cool. And has an impact. That's very cool. Yeah, there's tons of places around here to get into.
Have you been to Short Sands?
You probably been to Short Sands.
Absolutely.
Love Short Sands.
Walk through Old Growth. You get right on the beach, and it's got a big waterfall and some caves. I always try to take everybody down there. You got to write a poem about that. I think Fort George had a beer on it, so we got to do a poem on it.
Yeah, that makes sense. You might have just wrote the poem, man.
Yeah, well, I got to go drink one of those beers and write it. I've never really tried to write poetry. There's a question for you. Why did you go from short stories to poetry?
I think I was looking for a less a viable way to make. Like, I don't know why. It's a good question, man. It was just kind of speaking to me, you know. And I'm like, I have a job, so I don't need to write for monetary reasons. So I'm just kind of
nobody does anymore.
Nobody can. Nobody can. Right. So I mean, yeah, right. And so I just kind of do what I want, which is nice. You know what I mean? And so that's just what was talking to me. I was like, let's see if I can do this thing, have fun with it, and say something or not, and whatever.
So what are some of the ways that you connect with other poets and writers here on the North Coast?
There's not a lot here, as you know. But there's
well, I'll tell you, man, I've lived rural, very rural. Like when I was up in Mackenzie Bridge, and Mackenzie Bridge only had a population of 200 people. And I mean, the whole river had a pretty good population, but there was not a literary scene like there is here. I mean, there is actually a pretty good art and literary scene, right?
There's something here. That's true. Yeah, there's the Ricks. Did you go to that?
Yeah, I didn't go to that last night. I was going to the Poets on the Pier, Ricks Open Mic.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's such a fun thing. So that's at Winecraft, and that's the first Tuesday of every month.
Yep.
Yeah. And about 6:30. But if you're going to go, you got to go early because there's a limited amount of tables.
Yeah.
And it fills up pretty quick.
Yeah, it's a pretty small space, pretty intimate space.
Yeah.
And you're right, it fills up. And if you're going to read, go early. Get your name on a list.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, and do that. It's great. I've only been twice.
I've been more than you, but I just haven't gone lately.
Yeah, yeah. I've been recently twice, and I've had a great time. It's a great crowd. And there's like your standards, like, people that's been doing it, they've been there year after year probably, and then you have people like me that dip in and out, and so you never know who you're going to see, which is cool, right?
Yeah. But other than that, what are some other ways that you connect with writers? I guess we're doing this.
We're doing this, yeah, right? We've done, and we did some reading, right? Diana's Bar.
Yeah, Diana's Bar. We had that whole reading series. We had the what was that called? The Story Slam. That was there.
That was there too.
Diana's Bar as well.
Yeah.
And do you ever hang out or write for the Fisher Poets?
No. No. I've heard of that.
Yeah. I don't.
Have you?
I got to interview somebody for that because, from what I understand, you have to be a part of the fishing industry in order to get in.
That's how I understand it. Yeah.
But then I told somebody that. They're like, well, have you ever fished? I'm like, yeah, I went and did the salmon run. I'm like, write a poem. It's like, wrong
interesting.
Guy,
okay,
not
yeah.
me. I have. Yeah. This is true. So, what are your thoughts on the role of writing and poetry in a community like this? I mean, what's the importance and why?
That's a good question. I wish I would have had this beforehand to think about.
Well, we were just talking about the Fisher Poets, you know.
I mean, that's great. Yeah,
they've really become part of the culture. And I think that's an amazing thing. And this could be a town just about fishing or just about tourism at this point or beer.
Right.
But it's really adding that poetry gives it something else, you know?
It does.
You think?
Absolutely. And Astoria is an interesting town, dude. It is. It's a quirky little town.
It's got ghosts it's been collecting for
absolutely
long time,
right? It's got the underground and stuff.
Yeah.
You can see it in the sidewalks with the the glass, amethyst glass and stuff. Like, it's got an interesting history here. And it's got quirky stuff even going on now. Architecture is cool and stuff. And so I can think of a place like this. It's almost like a baby Portland on the coast, Astoria, in a lot of ways. I think Portland kind of outgrew me. Not the other way around. It sprawled too far, and I had to get out. That's a nice little place. Astoria is a great little place for art. I think that it kind of calls for art, man. And you see it when you walk down the streets there.
All right, so I got to say, hey, if you're just joining us, this is Sean Davis on River Writers. I'm here with Jason Arias, North Coast writer and poet now.
Yeah.
All right, can you share a couple of these?
Oh, probably. Let's see.
I just slid it across the table and made a funny sound on this recording.
Yeah, that's cool. Keep that. Makes it sound like a record scratch. Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's try this one real quick.
All right.
It's called Bad Martyrs Now. We took to waging virtual wars instead of real battles, collecting virtuous fortune cookies packed full of tiny wisdoms that lacked fortitude but tasted like truth. We stuck to tuning in and doing less because we couldn't understand true sacrifice, like my man MLK. Couldn't manage the dog's jaws and still hold tight to love's vision. Couldn't get blown down the street sideways by fire hoses and remain on message. Couldn't take a bullet in front of a hotel room in Memphis without wanting to crawl back up from the concrete and gouge somebody's eyes out. Couldn't cabbage patch without the Urkel. Couldn't breathe without space. Couldn't sleep a wink without crunching the numbers on how long it would take to start indiscriminately giving it, giving it, giving it, everything, all of them, all of us, away.
All right. No, it's like, all right, at first I thought you were talking about like how social media kind of makes us numb in a way, and then we went to like the assassination of MLK, and then we were doing the cabbage patch with Urkel. I can see what people are talking about. Like, yeah, he writes about everything.
He writes about everything. Yeah. Try to go on little journeys in here, right?
Yeah.
That's what we kind of try to do with them.
So, but what were you talking about with technology in there? I feel like I'm missing something because I think that might be one of the main things that that poem is about, but I might be wrong.
No, yeah, there is some to that. Well, really, this poem is just about bumper stickers. You know what I
mean? I did not get that at all.
Well, it's just kind of about the way we think we can describe these very complex things, you know, in these very complex times, with something that can fit on a bumper sticker or phrases or something.
Or 140 characters in a tweet.
Something a crowd can chant, you know what I mean? And it's fun. Those things are fun. But when you start talking about serious things in a very truncated way, it gets messy, right?
Yeah.
It gets messy. And furthermore, like, it's not enough to just say a chant or put a bumper sticker on, probably, if you want to affect real change.
Oh, I know. So. I know, especially nowadays, you know. But I do catch myself like, all right, I'm going to put the post together on Facebook, and then the words are really big, the letters are really big, and then they go small because I hit too many characters. Yeah. I'm like, oh, nobody's going to read it now.
Yeah.
I got economy of language.
Yeah.
You know, and, or if you just like, I'm just going to rant, nobody's going to read that, man, if it's a like really long rant on social media.
No. So. You can't, yeah.
So
social
feel
media
like
is weird.
Kinda,
And I'm too outdated for that, dude. Like, you know?
And you're 100% right. Just putting a post up or hashtag's not going to affect change.
Yeah. And I'm not saying don't, because, you know, maybe you need to get the word out. But at the same time, don't let it be, don't do that instead.
Yeah,
don't you know what I mean? Don't
that.
Let it be your placeholder of like change. Right? If you care about something, don't just send it out and expect something to happen, I guess. Because everybody else is doing the same thing. We're all just attached to our phones. You know?
But that's a great point. It is like that. It's like, it's digital bumper stickers now.
But I think nowadays, and that's an unfortunate thing too about that, is because they look to the artists to bring their own audience, right? People are looking to artists,
especially nowadays.
Publishing houses, everything. Yeah. They're looking right in music. They're looking instead of like saying, "Hey, this person has something. Let's show the world what it is." Instead of like, "Prove to everybody else you have something, then we'll help get it out
there."
Show
you, yeah.
Right? So you're kind of your own everything at this point. Like back in the day, right? There were patrons to help get your work out.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you go back? I'll give you a place to live and a thing to do. Go do your thing, and I'll get it out there. Don't worry about it. Right.
Yeah.
It's just, and I don't know if we need that, but it's an interesting other side of the spectrum.
Yeah. So. Nowadays, I know a lot of artists that their only patron is an unemployment check.
Yeah. Yeah,
or
right.
If you get a job working a graveyard security, you could probably get paid to write that way.
Right. Let's start this one. So this one I wrote on our porch in Gearhart. So.
All right.
And you can probably see it. It's called The Modernity of Our Lost World. For the longest time, we thought there was some depressed owl calling from the neighbor's backyard. With each sunrise, we'd hear its longing hoots. Yearning for an old mate, or a new mate, or some sense of salvation. Imagined it losing its nocturnal instincts in the midst of too much content consumed during the day. Or maybe I'm just projecting here. While we drank coffee on the porch amidst the fog and wildfire smoke, the emptiness that photoshopped the early 2020s sufficiently peopleless. But we didn't feel lonely because we had each other and our coffee. We felt incubated, growing in strange and wonderful ways. While the populace was anxiously anticipating piecing out into the absolute beauty of a catastrophe beyond us, figuring we all, except for that owl, deserved something like this anyway. But it turned out that we were all wrong. Death doesn't come for us as some viral stranger, but as an old friend. The way Joe Pesci was taken care of in Goodfellas. We kill us. Nostra damn us. Our thing blocks us. Our throats sick with chat room conversations while talking about humanity's downfalls and hourly updates and the possibility of the future writing of lumber prices so we can finally build that deck. Or why this is that or the other. Wonder if our species will wake up from this dream and never stop throwing up. But man, I just kept worrying about that owl while sitting on the porch with you and trying hard not to cry about it. But it turned out we were going to be all right because we didn't die. And that owl hadn't even lost its partner or its way. And it wasn't even an owl. It was a mourning dove cooing like it should to its counterpart. And we laughed at our stupidity. And I put my coffee down and sighed. And you touched the back of my hand so gently and asked why I was still crying.
That's that one. I love it. No, I don't even know if that's what you meant, but I feel I relate to that because there is kind of like this silent sadness that a lot of us have. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I was teaching, I used to tell the students, like, we're living in some amazing times. It's like a lot of stuff going on. But I'm amazed out, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah,
like everything's moving so fast, man.
I don't know. Maybe you agree or not. I think there is this kind of, I call it the cult of positivity, happening right now. Where it's, and there's not, a, it's great. Sometimes you've got to stay positive to just want to keep going. You know what I mean? But it's same, but I think it's taken to an extreme sometimes where it doesn't even allow you to feel what you're feeling. And and the easiest way to go on is to just acknowledge what's happening, then step out of it, maybe. But
yeah, you know? Another thing about that, and I think we should see more of it, is a lot of poetry and art from that time period. You know, of because it was very uncertain for all of us. You know, so many people were dying, and we were all kind of in our own bubbles.
Absolutely.
But you still had somebody, but I'm sure it got pretty lonely, right?
I mean, it was.
But you were also,
it was a weird thing. I was still working through
it. You had to work through it because you're mandatory. You got to get out there.
And like a lot of people, I thought the same thing about like grocery workers, man. Like they had to work through it. And I imagine they felt the same as we did, you know? And it's funny because we moved out here the week that they shut down COVID. You know, we moved out to the coast. That didn't mean to. That's just how it worked out. You know, nobody saw it coming.
Who are some of your favorite poets? Or you know, give me one of your favorite poems. You don't have to recite it.
I'm not that guy. I don't have the mind to recite anything.
I wish I did.
Me too. Yeah. Yeah. My brain is going. I always like. Like the Beats were great, right?
Ginsberg, Kerouac,
and Ginsberg was, I think, the guy that that I'm drawn from. I mean, Howells, amazing poem.
Yeah,
I mean, there's multiple pages. It's a little book, right?
Right.
Which is, and he did some amazing stuff, and he also did some visually interesting stuff, which I kind of copied for him for my stuff. Not copied, but I like playing with words and putting them in the page, different places.
Yeah.
Gil Scott Heron, who I've quoted a couple times in this book, you know, from his classic Whitey on the Moon thing, which is still plays, which is really just talking about, it was a space race, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what he's talking about. It's like, hey man, we're spending all this money to get to this rock that nothing, and which is fine. I mean, we're all interested, but at the same time, we have our own communities that have healthcare issues and you know, food issues. Maybe our priorities are a little displaced.
They want to like, hey, let's go to Mars and terraform it. And like, hey, why don't we terraform Earth?
Right. It's like this weird disposable idea we have of the place we live. Like, oh, don't worry, we'll just make one over there. That doesn't even have an atmosphere,
no air,
dude.
There's no water.
Yeah.
So what are you doing next? What do you got going on next?
Litter. In the literary world. So I mean, I'm always working on something, just like you are, right? Yeah. So I got another
ideas, not enough pencils.
Yeah, no, a lot of pencils. a lot of pencils, a lot of rejections. Well, I got like a novella I've been putting out there for a little bit. We'll see what happens with that. And
what kind of novella?
What's the elevator pitch? It's about a desert lush who falls in love with a talking well, and they adopt a coyote as their son. And then, so then when the coyote gets sick, the guy jumps down the well with the coyote trying to save him, and he wakes up in a lighthouse. That's that. So it's kind of...
that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. It's funny like how like sometimes art goes backwards. Like I wrote this novel, and then I was listening to Arcade Fire. Are you familiar with Arcade Fire?
Yeah,
right?
And
I was listening to one of their albums, and I came across a song. There's a song called The Well in the Lighthouse. So there was that. There's that little novella, which I really love. And it's the things you love that tend to... not get picked up sometimes.
Oh, tell me about it. I don't even try it. I'll finish a book and I'll just self-publish it on the Kindle Direct, the KDP on Amazon, and I won't tell anybody that I did it. I just put it under a different name. I mean, like Ian Avey, there's like four or five of them. I'm just
really
done with it. I'm not even care.
You're working under a pseudonym?
Sometimes it depends.
Okay.
Yeah, it took me a long time in my life to discover, like, people used to call me prolific, and I'm like, oh, that must mean I'm good. No, it just means you do it. It doesn't mean you're any good.
Yeah, I've been called that too, and I thought it was something way cooler than it actually means. It's a good point. There's that, and there's another couple. I already got another couple collections of poetry. See what to do with, but they
gotta send them out.
It's kind of like, I've got one in the works sending out, and I'm kind of messing with another one.
I don't like doing any of that.
You know, I don't like it either. But yeah, and it's fun to see the different ways people say no, and the more creative, the better. Usually, it's the same thing, but every once in a while, you get like something cool. And, the press that picked this one up. They said yes in a cool way that I thought was no, and they said, hey, you know, they're. Have the exact email somewhere, but essentially, like, this is pretty far off the rails from what we really do, and that's why we like it.
That's awesome.
That was like this is going to be a good no, but it turned out to be a good yes.
That's great. All right. Well, hey, thanks so much for sitting down with me. This is really cool. We're here at the Clatsop Community College Library, checking out the Columbia River.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's
a beautiful day today, and it's a good day for talking about poetry and writing.
Yeah, so. Thanks for having me, brother.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you for joining us today on River Writers, and thanks to my guest, Jason Arias, for sitting down and chatting about writing. And a big thank you to all of you out there listening. The Writers Guild of Astoria is a 501c3 nonprofit organization promoting the literary arts and serving writers in the Lower Columbia region. You can learn more and become a member by visiting www.thewritersguild.org. Until next time, keep those words flowing and your pencils sharp. I'm Sean Davis for River Writers.